Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. So 63 Labour peers have taken the unprecedented step of taking out an advert in The Guardian today saying the Labour Party welcomes everyone irrespective of race, creed, age, gender identity or sexual orientation, except, it seems, Jews. Isabel, what do you make of this?
Well, it's extraordinary. To communicate with Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, through an advert in a newspaper that the public can read shows the breakdown in relations within the party, where Jeremy Corbyn appears to be barely speaking to certain people who complain. And it shows up what the Labour leadership's attitude towards complaints, whether of anti-Semitism or indeed sexual harassment, is. And that's that they always see it through a political prism, that these complaints are used to undermine the leader, or if they're made against their enemies, they will then use those complaints, regardless of the victims involved, to undermine their enemies. They never actually see them for what they are, which is complaints about behaviour, which is complaints about anti-Semitism, which is complaints about sexual harassment. And so for the Labour leadership, this whole discussion of anti-Semitism isn't really about the problem of Jew hatred within the Labour Party. It's actually about people trying to bring Jeremy Corbyn down because, as he said at Prime Minister's Questions today, you know, Labour is an anti-racist party, and they very much have a sort of Tinkerbell attitude towards these things, which is, you know, if you say I believe in fairies and Tinkerbell stays alive, if you say I am anti-racist, it makes you anti-racist, even if your actions suggest otherwise. And so the Labour peers have done this partly because peers can't be deselected, so they're much more protected than Labour MPs, who are desperately trying to speak out against anti-Semitism and give members and Labour voters a sense that the battle isn't over in the party, but also mindful that they may actually get booted out by their Corbynite memberships for opposing Jeremy Corbyn. And so this is a way of drawing attention to quite how bad a large group of MPs as well as peers feel the crisis is within the Labour Party.
James, do you think the Labour Party and the leadership are becoming more repentant after the backlash to their reaction to the Panorama show last week, or are they just sticking their head in the sand?
I don't think the leadership is in the leader's office is at all. And I think there is more concern. I mean, Isabel points out in her piece in the forthcoming Spectator, you know, people like Emily Formbury, who are quite a good judge of which way the wind is blowing, they are now expressing more concern. Yeah. I mean, to be fair to Emily Formbury, she did make this point at party conference, I think, last year. But I think there is a fundamental issue with that Labour moderates, or whatever you want to call them, need to confront. So they paid their money to take out their advert in The Guardian, all well and good. But they need to face up to two things. First of all, these people all still take the Labour whip in the House of Lords. Mm. And however much the Labour Party in the House of Lords thinks it's declared, kind of unilaterally declared independence from Jeremy Corbyn and the rest of the Labour Party, you know, they are still taking the Labour whip. And the question for all of them is, at the next general election, will you campaign for Labour candidates? They will say yes. Oh, I'll campaign for my friends. They're good people. Blah, blah, blah. They're not answering. The fact is, you cannot get away from the fact that in our system, any vote for Labour at the next election is a vote to put Jeremy Corbyn into Downing Street. Because unless these Labour MPs are going to say, well, I won't, you know, if they stand under the Labour Party banner, when the Cabinet Secretary is working out who the Queen should call to ask to form a government, if there are X number of more Labour MPs than there are Tory MPs, Jeremy Corbyn is likely to be the person that they call, because that is the way the system works. So they face a fundamental choice. They either need to remove Jeremy Corbyn as Labour leader somehow, or they need to say, right, I'm not campaigning for Labour at the next election. I'm not going to encourage people to vote for Labour at the next election, because that is an attempt to put Jeremy Corbyn into 10 Downing Street. You know, at the last election, that contradiction was there, but Labour was so far behind in the polls at the beginning that kind of everyone could kind of get away with ignoring it. You know, a few honourable exceptions. People basically said, it's fine to go and vote Labour because we're not going to win, and we'll just kind of, we'll keep the Tories on a tight leash, and hopefully we'll get rid of Corbyn after the election. You won't be able to say that at the next election, because Jeremy Corbyn will start that next election within striking distance of 10 Downing Street. And so these people who took out this advert, they have a very big decision to take at some point soon, because I think the chances of an election, you know, this autumn are fairly high, and the chances of an election before this time next year are very high. and they need to work out what they are going to do in that circumstance, and essentially how seriously they take the stuff that they are complaining about in the advert today.
Lisbelle, do you think Labour politicians are having that discussion with themselves, and have they come to a decision about what they're going to do come an election?
Oh yeah, they're definitely having that discussion. I think their main decision is they need to get rid of Jeremy Corbyn, and the way they can't do that is through a coup. Because they tried that in 2016, it just made him stronger. So there's further details of this in tomorrow's Spectator cover piece, but there is an advanced piece of work underway from Labour MPs to try to get Jeremy Corbyn out. Because as James says, it will be impossible to stand under a Labour banner and campaign for Jeremy Corbyn if you don't want Jeremy Corbyn to be Prime Minister. I mean, it doesn't work.
And James, this issue also came up in PMQs today. How do you think Jeremy Corbyn dealt with that attack?
I think you see Jeremy Corbyn doing his kind of usual thing and saying, well, how can there can't be racism in the Labour Party, because the Labour Party is an anti-racist party. Well,
definitionally.
But there clearly is a problem in the Labour Party, and it has clearly got massively worse over the last few years. And I think that, you know, this is something that people need to reflect on why that exists. You know, and also you saw the other kind of classic whataboutery tactic of Jeremy Corbyn saying, but there's Islamophobia in the Tory party, so, you know, almost all even. But, you know, I think it is very hard to suggest that the way that Labour is handling anti-Semitism sets anyone an example of how to deal with a problem of prejudice within a political party.
And James, today Jacob Rees-Mogg has come out hitting back against Remainer forces in the party. What's happened there?
Well, Jacob Rees-Mogg has written an article for The Telegraph today saying, you know, all Philip Hammond's predictions about how much no deal Brexit would cost are wrong, and it wouldn't even cost money in the short term. And then in what is going to be a slight feature of this Tory leadership contest, which is Tory MPs kind of openly slagging each other off on Twitter, Philip Hammond has sent a tweet saying, I mean, I'm happy to debate no deal any time, but I can't remember the precise rating. I mean, it's scared or appalled that someone who's so close to the incoming government thinks that there wouldn't be a cost to this. And I think that what you're seeing here is a preview of some of the fights that are about to come. With Amber Rudd having moved to a more accepting position of no deal, Philip Hammond is now going to become the standard bearer for those Tories who are most opposed to and most worried about no deal. And I think there'll be a kind of constant sniping between Hammond and the incoming government. And how that resolves itself is kind of one of the great questions. And, you know, I think it is worth, I mean, it's a sign of the extraordinary nature of British politics, but Philip Hammond has left the door open to voting, you know, the man who is currently the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the second most senior or third most senior job in the government, has left the door open to voting against his own party in a confidence vote in the coming months, if that was the only way to stop no deal. Now, he hasn't said he would do it, but he also hasn't said he won't do it. And so I think that question just shows the febrile nature of British politics right now. And I think there is, you know, I think there is a tension here, because I think, you know, what Philip Hammond says in this, the panorama on no deal, which is, essentially, he didn't want businesses to prepare for no deal because he thought it would be bad for the economy. That does slightly go against what government policy was, has been for that period. And also, I don't think it's a particularly sensible decision, because you can't guarantee that there's not going to be no deal. And if businesses aren't prepared for no deal, it's going to be more disruptive and chaotic than it would be otherwise. I mean, if businesses were prepared, you couldn't remove all the disruption, but you can make things slightly smoother. And so I think Philip Hammond and his role is going to be a kind of major flashpoint over the next few months.
And as well, do you think the Tory leadership contesters, especially Boris Johnson, are being complacent about the chances of a no deal? Is it part of a strategy to force the EU into a better negotiating position? For example, what we heard on Hustings a few days ago.
Yes, well, Boris Johnson did sort of move us closer to a no deal in many ways with his comments in Monday's Sun Hustings about the Northern Irish backstop. Now, partly that's because he actually wants to play poker properly, and you can't, as Sarah Champion did yesterday on television, say, this is my position, this is what you do when you play poker, which was basically her telling us that when she plays poker, she says, I'm bluffing at the crucial moment. Now, I'm not very good at cards, but I know you don't do that. But also, actually, for Boris Johnson and for a lot of those around him in his campaign team, they don't think the shock of no deal would be so catastrophic that it would be unbearable. They think it would be a shake-up that Britain could endure, and that actually the consequences politically and culturally of not leaving the European Union could be just as bad.
And James, today as well, Ursula von der Leyen has been confirmed as the incoming president of the European Commission. What does this mean for Brexit in the months to come?
Well, I think it tells us a few things. I mean, first of all, the relatively narrow margin shows how much, you know, how much more difficult the arithmetic in this new European Parliament will be. We're getting things through. I think the kind of fracturing of European politics, which is happening kind of across the continent, means that this isn't going to be the kind of classic. It'll be far harder to put together legislative alliances in the European Parliament than it has been before. I think from a Brexit point of view, von der Leyen is a fairly decent choice for the UK. She's been the German Defence Minister, and therefore is, you know, although she is a federalist, and although she has repeated all the mantras about the withdrawal agreement not being reopened, she is quite aware of the security aspects of the relationship, which, you know, which are the biggest argument, I think, on the EU side against actually a full-on rupture with the UK. The case for compromise, I think, is much more geopolitical than economic. So that's a good thing. I also think, in a weird way, her appointment helps the argument for Brexit in this country, because if you look at the full gamut of appointments, you know, from Lagarde, Charles Michel, the European Council, von der Leyen, it does show that ultimately you can argue the toss about the timings of Brexit and whether it was whether that was a particularly right moment to leave then or not. It does show that ultimately the European Union is moving to a place that very few people in this country want to go. If you look at some of the things that, you know, von der Leyen's talked about, you know, creating an EU that is a federal state along the lines of a Switzerland or a US, you know, there are vanishingly few politicians in Britain who would be prepared to publicly argue for that position. I think what it shows is, and I think this would be a problem for the Remain side if there was any second referendum, but that argument for Remain and reform is actually not that credible, because certainly the Eurozone core, they want to go to a more integrated, more federal place. And I think, in a way, her appointment underlines that fact.
James and Isabel, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes. And do let us know what you think through emails and reviews. We'd love hearing from you. And if you'd like to hear Douglas Murray in conversation with Lionel Shriver, he'll be talking to her on the 28th of October in Westminster. Subscribers get early bird tickets, so you can book now. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Lionel. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.